All right, welcome you. Today we're going deep, and I mean deep, into Bayesian probability, and Bayesian thinking.
Yeah, it's really fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and if you've ever kind of felt lost in the fog of uncertainty when you're trying to make decisions, this might be the framework that helps you kind of see a little bit clearer and make some really smarter decisions.
It can be a powerful tool, that's for sure.
Yeah, and we've got a bunch of different sources here. Articles explaining the core concepts, Wikipedia for some of the historical context, but also we got into some interesting discussions. One was on a statistics forum about overfitting, which, happens even in Bayesian models.
Right, no model is perfect.
Exactly. And we also have a really user-friendly guide to thinking like a Bayesian, and then even dipping our toes into medical research and how they're using it there.
Yeah, and we even found some pretty deep philosophical discussions on Reddit, of all places.
Reddit, yeah, the home of deep thought. So, what we're really going to try to do in this deep dive is, first of all, what does Bayesian probability even mean? Like, what is it? How is it different from maybe the more traditional statistical approaches that you might have come across?
Right, like what we typically think of as statistics.
Exactly. And we're also going to uncover some of the ways it shows up in our everyday lives. Like, you might be surprised where this kind of thinking is already at work. And then we're going to look at some other areas where it's being applied.
From very practical to very theoretical.
Exactly. And of course, we're going to talk about when is it helpful, when is it maybe not so helpful, what are some of the pitfalls?
Right, because every tool has its limits.
Absolutely. So let's just jump right in. So first things first, the fundamental concept of Bayesian probability. One of the things that we were reading is that it's not just about the frequency of something happening. Like if you flip a coin a bunch of
It's
times.
not just about how many times you get heads or tails in the long run.
Yeah, it's more about how we look at it in terms of like a reasonable expectation, representing like a state of knowledge.
Yeah, like a quantification of your belief in something based on what you know right now.
Okay, so it's not just about the hard numbers of how often something has happened.
Exactly. It's about incorporating what you already know, even if that knowledge is incomplete.
Okay. I think I'm starting to get it. So it's about taking what we know and applying it to what we don't know.
Yeah, like let's say you have a hypothesis about something. In traditional statistics, you might test that hypothesis, but you wouldn't necessarily assign a probability to it.
So it's either true or false.
Right. But in Bayesian probability, you can actually say, okay, based on everything I know right now, I think there's like a 70% chance this hypothesis is true.
So you're quantifying your uncertainty.
Exactly. And then as you get more information, more evidence, you can update that probability.
Okay, so walk me through that. How do you actually update your belief?
So the key is this thing called Bayes' theorem. It's a formula, but don't worry, we won't get bogged down in the math.
Good, because that's not my strong suit.
Basically, you start with your prior probability. This is
Yeah.
like your initial belief based on whatever information you have before you get any new evidence.
Okay, like my starting point.
Right. Then you get some new data, some new evidence, and you use Bayes' theorem to combine that new data with your prior probability. And what you get out of that is your posterior probability.
So the posterior is like my updated belief.
Exactly. It's your belief after you've taken the new evidence into account.
And then I guess if I get even more new evidence, I can just keep updating, right?
Absolutely. That's the beauty of it. It's a constant process of refining your beliefs as you get more information.
Okay, so this is blowing my mind a little bit. But before we go any further, you mentioned there's actually like different ways of being Bayesian.
Yeah, there are two main schools of thought, you could say. Two interpretations of what Bayesian probability really means.
Yeah, lay it on me. What are the two?
So the first one is called objective Bayesian probability. And the idea here is that probability should be like an extension of logic. Like if two people have the exact same information about something,
They should come to the same conclusion.
exactly, their reasonable expectation or the probability they assign should be the same. It's all about consistency and following the rules of Bayesian statistics.
So it's like a purely logical way of looking at it.
Right. But then there's subjective Bayesian probability, which takes a slightly different view. This approach acknowledges that different people might start with different beliefs.
Well, yeah, we all have our own experiences and biases, right?
Exactly. So even if they're presented with the same evidence, their posterior probabilities might end up being different. It's more about personal beliefs, informed by logic and rationality, but not necessarily identical for everyone.
Okay, so the key difference is really about how you establish that initial prior probability.
You got it. It's about whether you're trying to arrive at a universally agreed upon prior based on pure logic, or whether you're acknowledging that different people might have different starting points based on their own unique knowledge and experiences.
That's pretty deep. So is all of this a relatively recent development? I mean, the name Bayesian sounds like it has some history behind it.
Yeah, it definitely does. The name comes from Thomas Bayes, who was a mathematician and, get this, a clergyman back in the 18th century.
A mathematician and a clergyman. That's an interesting combination.
Right. But he actually worked through a specific case of what we now call Bayes' theorem in one of his papers. But it was Pierre Simon Laplace, another brilliant mathematician and astronomer, who came along a bit later and really fleshed it out.
So he kind of took Bayes' work and ran with it.
Yeah, exactly. He developed the general version of the theorem and started applying it to all sorts of different fields, like astronomy, medicine, even legal reasoning.
So Laplace was the one who really put it on the map.
Yeah, you could say that. And early Bayesian inference was actually known as inverse probability, because it kind of lets you work backward from observed outcomes to figure out the likely causes.
Interesting. So did it just take off from there?
Well, not exactly. After the 1920s, it was kind of overshadowed by what we now call frequentist statistics. That became the dominant approach for much of the 20th century.
The Bayesian methods were kind of on the back burner for a while.
Yeah, but then they started making a big comeback in the 1980s, partly because of advances in computing power, which made it easier to do the complex calculations involved.
So computers made it more practical.
Exactly. And there was also a growing awareness that frequentist methods weren't always the best tool for certain types of problems, especially complex ones like in machine learning.
Okay, so we've got this concept of updating our beliefs with data, and now we have a bit of the historical context. But what are some of the core characteristics that define Bayesian methodology? What makes it unique?
Well, one key thing is the use of random variables to model uncertainty. And not just for things we traditionally think of as random, but for everything, like even uncertainty stemming from just not having enough information.
So it's about quantifying what we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, there's the all-important prior probability distribution. That's your starting point based on what you know going in.
Right, we've talked about that.
And then you apply Bayes' theorem, you get new data, you update your belief, and that becomes your new prior for the next round. It's a very iterative process.
So it's constantly evolving as you get more information. That's really cool. Now, how does a Bayesian look at a hypothesis differently than someone using frequentist statistics?
Well, a frequentist generally sees a hypothesis as either true or false. Their focus is on the probability of observing the data you have if a particular hypothesis were true. But a Bayesian actually assigns a probability to the hypothesis itself.
So it's about the probability of the hypothesis being true, not just the probability of the data given the hypothesis.
Exactly. It's a subtle but important difference. It allows you to directly address the question of how likely a particular explanation is. Okay, but I think we need to move beyond the formulas and talk about Bayesian thinking as more of a philosophy, a way of looking at the world.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. It's more than just the math, right?
Absolutely. It's about being open to updating your beliefs as you learn new things. It's about recognizing that you're not always right and being willing to change your mind when the evidence suggests you should.
So it's about embracing uncertainty.
Yeah, and about thinking in terms of degrees of belief rather than absolutes. Like, instead of saying, I believe X or I don't believe X, you might say, I'm 80% sure that X is true. It allows for more nuance and flexibility in your thinking.
I like that. It seems more in line with how our brains actually work, you know?
Right. It's about constantly refining your mental model of the world as you get new information.
Okay, so we've mentioned frequentist statistics a few times. Let's really dig into how these two approaches differ. It seems like there's a fundamental difference in how they even define what probability is.
You're absolutely right. That's the core of the distinction. For a frequentist, probability is all about long-run frequencies.
Yeah.
Like if you flip a coin an infinite number of times, what proportion of those flips will be heads?
Okay, so it's based on this idea of repeating an experiment over and over.
Exactly. But for a Bayesian, probability is a measure of your belief in something based on the information you have at hand. It's more about your current state of knowledge than about some hypothetical infinite series of trials.
Okay, so let's use that coin flipping example again. How would these two approaches analyze it differently?
Sure. Let's say you flip a coin 10 times and you get 7 heads.
Yeah.
A frequentist would look at that data and say, okay, based on this sample, the probability of getting heads with this coin is 0.7.
7 out of 10.
Right. And they might construct a confidence interval around that estimate, based on the idea that if you repeated the experiment many times, a certain percentage of those intervals would contain the true probability.
So they're focused on what would happen if you did the experiment over and over.
Exactly. But a Bayesian would start with a prior belief about the coin. Like maybe they think it's probably a fair coin. So they might have a prior probability distribution centered around 0.5.
Okay. So they're bringing in some outside knowledge.
Right. And then they would use Bayes' theorem to combine that prior with the observed data, the 7 heads out of 10 flips, to get a posterior probability distribution. This would reflect their updated belief about the coin's fairness, taking both the prior and the new data into account.
So the Bayesian approach is more about incorporating what you already know.
Exactly. And it also allows you to quantify your uncertainty more directly. Instead of a confidence interval, a Bayesian would typically report a credible interval, which directly gives the probability that the true value lies within a certain range.
So it's a more direct measure of your confidence in the estimate.
Exactly. Now, one of the common criticisms of Bayesian methods is that the choice of prior can be subjective.
Well, yeah, if two people start with different priors, they might end up with different conclusions, even if they see the same data.
That's true. And that's a valid concern. But Bayesians have developed ways to try and minimize the influence of the prior, using things like uninformative priors. And they might also argue that frequentist approaches are not as objective as they seem, because they also rely on certain assumptions that could be considered a form of prior belief.
So it's not like one approach is purely objective and the other is purely subjective.
Right. There's always some degree of subjectivity involved in any statistical analysis. The important thing is to be transparent about your assumptions and to be aware of the potential biases they might introduce. One interesting thing to note is that Bayesians can actually estimate the probability of a specific hypothesis being true. That's not something you can typically do in frequentist statistics.
So you're saying that in frequentist hypothesis testing, you're just testing whether the data is consistent with the null hypothesis, but you can't really say how likely the null hypothesis actually is.
That's right. But a Bayesian can directly address that question by assigning probabilities to different hypotheses. Okay, but let's move away from the technical stuff for a bit and talk about how this kind of thinking can be applied in our everyday lives.
Yeah, let's get practical, because I think a lot of people hear Bayesian and they think it's all about complex math.
Right, but the core principles can be applied even without doing any calculations. It's about being open to updating your beliefs, considering all the relevant information, and recognizing that nothing is certain.
So it's about being a more flexible and nuanced thinker.
Exactly. Like, one key principle is this aversion to absolutes. Bayesians are always thinking in terms of probabilities, recognizing that there's always some degree of uncertainty. So instead of saying, I'm sure this will happen or this will never happen, you might say, I'm 90% sure this will happen, or there's a small chance that this could happen.
So it's about embracing the margins, as you were saying earlier.
Yeah. And another key principle is to constantly be assessing how well your beliefs explain the evidence you're seeing. Like, if you have a hypothesis about something and you see evidence that contradicts it, you should be willing to update your belief.
So it's about being honest with yourself about what the evidence is telling you.
Exactly. And a really important principle is to consider all the relevant information, not just the stuff that supports your current beliefs. This is what's called the principle of total evidence.
Can you give me an example of that?
Sure. Think about that story of the World War II planes. They were trying to figure out where to reinforce the armor on the planes to make them more resilient.
Right. I've heard that one.
So initially, they looked at where the returning planes had been hit and thought, okay, we need to reinforce those areas. But then someone realized that they were only looking at the planes that had survived. The planes that had been hit in other more critical areas were the ones that hadn't made it back.
Right. So the data they were looking at was biased.
Exactly. They weren't considering the missing data. And that's a classic example of how neglecting to consider all the relevant information can lead to faulty conclusions.
Okay, so what are some other common pitfalls we should be aware of?
Well, one big one is the base rate fallacy. This is where you ignore the base rates, the underlying probabilities, and focus too much on new specific evidence.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. Imagine you're at a university campus and you see someone who looks like they could be a philosophy major. You know, kind of unkempt, carrying a copy of Nietzsche.
I can picture it.
But even if that person fits your stereotype of a philosophy major, If the university has 10 times as many business majors as philosophy majors,
it's more likely they're a business major, right?
Exactly. The base rates matter. And we often neglect them because it's more compelling to focus on the vivid, specific evidence right in front of us. Another key point is that Bayesian thinking is all about updating your beliefs incrementally. It's not about making huge leaps based on a single piece of evidence. It's about gradually refining your understanding as you get more and more information.
So it's a continuous process.
Exactly. And it requires a certain humility. It means being open to the possibility that you might be wrong and being willing to change your mind when the evidence warrants it. Okay, so we've talked about Bayesian thinking in everyday life. But where else is it being used?
Yeah, let's broaden our scope a bit.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, it's playing a huge role in machine learning. Algorithms are using Bayesian methods to incorporate prior knowledge, handle uncertainty, and learn from limited data.
Makes sense. And one of the articles we read talked about its application in medical research, specifically in clinical trials.
Yeah, it's become really important there. Bayesian methods allow for more adaptive trial designs, where you can adjust the parameters of the trial based on the data you're collecting.
So it's more flexible and responsive.
Exactly. And that can be really valuable, especially when you're dealing with something like a new disease where you're trying to learn as quickly as possible. But there's also some debate about how to best incorporate prior beliefs in medical research to make sure the results are reliable and interpretable. It's a complex issue.
So it's a powerful tool, but it needs to be used carefully.
Right. And then there's this whole area of philosophical Bayesian thinking, or Bayesian epistemology, which is pretty wild. It's basically applying the core principles of Bayesian updating to all of our beliefs, not just scientific ones.
So it's like a grand theory of how we learn and update our understanding of the world.
Exactly. It's a really interesting idea, but some people argue that it's not as scientifically rigorous as it might seem. And there's a danger of oversimplifying things when you try to apply it to complex real-world situations. But it's definitely food for thought.
Okay, so let's wrap things up by talking about when Bayesian thinking is most helpful and when it might not be the best approach.
Sure. So Bayesian methods really shine when you have relevant prior information that you can bring to the table. If you have a good understanding of the base rates, or if there's a lot of previous research on the topic, a Bayesian approach can help you make more accurate inferences, especially if you don't have a lot of new data.
So it's good for situations where you're starting with some knowledge, not just a blank slate.
Right. And it's also very useful when you're dealing with a lot of uncertainty and you need to update your beliefs as you get new information. Plus, the fact that it gives you a whole probability distribution over the parameters of interest rather than just a single point estimate can be really valuable.
So you get a more nuanced picture.
Exactly. But there are also some potential downsides. The choice of prior can be subjective, as we discussed, and some Bayesian models can be computationally expensive to run. Plus, there's always the risk of the base rate fallacy if you're not careful.
And we talked about the possibility of overfitting, even with Bayesian models.
Right. So, like any tool, it has its strengths and weaknesses. The key is to use it wisely and to be aware of its limitations.
Okay, so after this deep dive, what's the main takeaway for our listeners? What do we want them to walk away with?
I think the key message is that Bayesian thinking is about embracing uncertainty, being open to new information, and constantly refining your understanding of the world. It's a powerful way to make better decisions and to navigate a complex and ever-changing reality.
It's about moving away from black and white thinking and embracing the shades of gray.
Exactly.
So as you go about your day, think about how you might apply some of these principles to your own life. Maybe you're facing a tough decision, or maybe you're just trying to make sense of something you've learned. How can Bayesian thinking help you approach it in a more thoughtful and nuanced way?
It's all about asking yourself, what do I know, what don't I know, and how can I use that knowledge to make better decisions?
That's a great way to put it. Well, thanks for joining us for this fascinating deep dive into Bayesian probability and Bayesian thinking. We hope you learned something new and maybe even changed your mind about a thing or two.
It's been a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.